Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, July 11th, and here are some of the stories we're covering. Nigerian President Bola Tinubu is the new chairman of the Economic Community of West African States.
You need a very strong leader from a country with the capabilities actually to lead, and I think that is why ECOWAS has obtained and government unanimously choose President Bola Ahmed Tinubu.
We'll get reaction from Nigeria. Newly re-elected Sierra Leone President Julius Maada Bio begins to name his new government. Liberian political commentator and radio talk show host holds his long-anticipated news conference. Lawyers for Zimbabwe's main opposition group plans to challenge Sunday's court ruling upholding a government ban on the party's political rally.
We have written a request to the magistrate's court for us to be finished with the written judgment so that we can, inform our next course of action. But obviously, we have taken the decision that we will be challenging the ruling.
And female leaders of the Fulani herders say women can play a vital role in reducing long-running friction with farming communities. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. West African leaders meeting Monday in Guinea-Bissau's capital chose Nigerian President Bola Tinubu as chairman of the regional body. He succeeds Guinea-Bissau President Umaru Sissoko Mbalo. President Tinubu's election comes as the sub-region faces many challenges, including terrorism and unconstitutional changes of government in Burkina Faso, Guinea, and Mali. Abdel Fattahou Moussa is the ECOWAS Commissioner for Political Affairs and Security. He tells me that President Tinubu's election was unanimous because the group needs a strong leader to guide the region through difficult times.
That is why I think the choice of President Tinubu was unanimously acclaimed by his peers, because ECOWAS is really confronting so many headwinds in the region. We've got the whole issue of terrorism, we've got unconstitutional changes of government, climate change, the situation around Ukraine and others that have all got impacts on peace and security in the West African region. So you need a very strong leader from a country with the capabilities actually to lead. And I think that is why ECOWAS has obtained and government unanimously choose President Bola Ahmed Tinubu as the chair of the authority.
Where are we in terms of the situation in Mali?
Regarding Mali, the situation is the same as the other countries that are ruled by military regimes. Whether you're talking about Guinea, you are talking about Burkina Faso and Mali, the heads of state are insisting that the 24-month deadline they give to these regimes to hand over must be strictly adhered to. And so the situation is very simple. ECOWAS expects all the three countries to hand over to civilian administration by the end of 2024, that is next year. And ECOWAS has not moved from that. So the heads of reiterated, that particular demand on them, and also called for unfettered access to the three countries by the mediators to make sure that the transitions are inclusive, they are transparent, and that they are participatory, so that there can be consensus going forward. So those are the issues with regard to the transition timetables.
I know it's ECOWAS policy about leaders not interfering with constitutions of their countries. What do you make of the development in Senegal, President Macky Sall deciding not to seek a third term?
There has been a lot of back channel contacts with President Macky Sall. Senegal is one of the bastions of democracy in our region. And if you remember, some years back, the former president also wanted to go for a third term, and he was defeated at the ballot box. And there were a lot of tensions leading up to the 3rd July, addressed by President Macky out to the nation, in which he put to rest the whole issue of whether he was going to go for a third term or not. He says he's not going to be a candidate, and that has actually calmed the situation in the country. So the heads of state and government, his peers, actually praise him for that demonstration of statesmanship by declaring that he was not going to go for a third term. I think it sends a very strong signal, you know, because the whole third term agenda in West Africa has been a source of tension and clashes in the country, and it was part of the reason there was a coup d'etat in Guinea, for example.
Abdel Fattah Moussa is the Commissioner for Political Affairs and Security of the Economic Community of West African States. He was speaking with me from Guinea-Bissau's capital, Bissau. In Nigeria, supporters of the ruling All Progressive Congress Party are congratulating President Bola Tinubu after he was named to lead the regional bloc. For analysis and expectations of the new head of the ECOWAS, viewers Peter Clutterich, Jide Ojo. He is a columnist for The Punch, a major Nigerian newspaper.
This is a great endorsement for the president of Tinubu, given the fact that he's been less than 2 months in power. And on his first meeting of ECOWAS head of state and government, he was bestowed with this honor of piloting the affairs of ECOWAS for the next 1 year. It shows that he's a very influential figure in the West African sub-region, and his presidency has now further clouted him as a statesman and a force to reckon with in the affairs of the economic community of West African states. The political elite of Nigeria, the All Progressive Congress Party leadership, and even the National Assembly are very excited. He's been receiving a lot of congratulatory messages across the globe.
What are the expectations of him now that he has been given the chairmanship of the African leaders in the West African region, particularly that he just won election a few months ago?
The expectations are very high. First and foremost, I believe part of the rationale that may have made the other 14 countries to want him to assume the leadership of ECOWAS at this point is about funding. About 60 to 70% of ECOWAS funding comes from Nigeria. And when you look at the fact that in the ECOWAS, Nigeria is the most populated, Nigeria is the biggest economy in Africa. And so all of this could have motivated the appointment of President Tinubu as the next ECOWAS chairman. Recently, the immediate past chairman of ECOWAS visited him during the Sallah break, if you recall, Peter, in his Lagos residence. Perhaps that was when this idea of him being the next chairman of ECOWAS was rooted and sealed.
Some people were suggesting that perhaps it was too soon to give the leadership of ECOWAS to President Tinubu, especially when his election is being contested, and that perhaps some people are suggesting that ECOWAS is trying to tip the scale, and that perhaps those should have been settled before he be given the mandate to administer the affairs of the regional body. Your take?
Yes, I also think likewise, but you see, politics transcends the national space and both boundaries. One thing you possibly do not know about Tinubu is that he's a very influential figure across the West African sub-region. Grapevine sources tell me that he was very influential in the enthronement of some of the presidents in the West African sub-region. Grapevine sources tell me about two or three of the presidents in the West African sub-region actually got his endorsement and maybe some support for him to emerge. So this could be part of an orchestrated move, as you put it, to tilt the contestation at the tribunal in his favor. But that is most likely going to be debunked by his media handlers, who may feel that, look, the contestation in court is a non-issue.
Jide Ojo is a columnist for The Punch, a major Nigerian newspaper. He was speaking with viewers Peter Clotty. In Liberia, political commentator and radio talk show host Henry Costa held his long-anticipated news conference on Monday. Costa, once a passionate supporter of former Vice President Joseph Boakai, made wild claims, including how he was offered millions of dollars by unnamed, serious, and powerful people to run against Boakai, who is the standard-bearer of the Unity Party in the October presidential election. Costa also alleges that the former vice president has a medical condition that requires surgery, without which he would die. Costa said the All-Liberian Party, to which he belongs, was no longer an ally of Boakai's Unity Party. He said the party would meet in the coming days to determine its next course of action. Luther Tappe is chairperson of the Unity Party of Joseph Boakai. He tells me that the party is not deterred by Costa's claims and is focused on rescuing Liberia in October.
Our reaction is to tell the Liberian people and tell the world that all that Costa spilled out today about Joseph Nyoman Boakai, our standard bearer, is very disheartening that a young man who has been a good friend of our party and a good friend of a good state man will be spilling out lies as he did today. But we don't hold that against him. We consider that as a propaganda. We'll continue to love him. The rescue train is on. And Liberians are very excited about what's going on, and we're not going to let no one deter the change and the transformation that the Liberian people have been yearning for through the Joseph Boakai presidency.
Mr. Costa made several allegations. He mentioned millions of dollars that were offered to him to stand as the or to run as president. So, I mean, the former vice president, what does he think about all this information?
When the Costa name was floating in the public domain, to be honest with you, Liberian people did not even take it serious. We know Costa to be a talk show host in Liberia, but as a vice president material, was not an appealing name at all in the public domain. And if Costa, for some reason, arranged money that he thought he could, it's against our Liberian laws that campaign money should be raised in a country, not foreign money. So to hear him describe some millions that he asked that should go to Boakai is not true. But whatever the case may be, the ALP leadership by Honorable Benanda Yuri and Henry Costa have been good friends of Mr. Boakai. And for whatever reason, if they decide to not be part of the rescue train, it's their prerogative. And we wish them best in all they do. But the Liberian people are resolved, they are determined to ensure that this country is rescued from George Weah Barr leadership, and we're not going to be deterred by anything.
I wanted to ask, because he said, as he put it, that the party of Mr. Benanai Yure, the All-Liberian Party, was no longer allies or partners with your party, the Unity Party, that you no longer share the same ideals or vision. Does that concern you, the fact that he said that, or that the fact that maybe the All-Liberian Party may no longer support the presidential bid of the former vice president?
Well, when he said that we no longer share the values that we Unity Party hold so dearly, are values that will transform and change the economic condition of our people and rescue our country from bad leadership.
Before I let you go, there was a revelation about the former vice president's health. How does your party feel about that?
We are not distracted by any health news that Costa thinks he knows about our vice president. In his report, he said from January to June, the heart of our vice president will stop beating. But we in July. We just from a campaign trail in the northern Liberia, in Nimba, where we received a mammoth crowd in Gantai, in Kample, in Bone County. And he was in high spirit, very energetic. From all indication, what Costa said about the health of our former vice president, our standard bearer, is not what we're going to buy into. These are part of his calculation to smear the good image of this man that the Liberian people want so dearly to change the country.
That was Luther Tappe, chairperson of Liberia's main opposition Unity Party. He was speaking with us from the capital, Monrovia. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, July 11th. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. In Sierra Leone, President Julius Maada Bio has begun naming members of his new government. This after he was recently declared winner of the presidential election. For more reaction and analysis about the formation of the new government, VOA's Peter Clotty Rich Ibrahim Tami. He is the executive director of the Center for Accountability and the Rule of Law.
There are a few surprises there. For example, the chief minister, who everyone knows to be a trusted ally of the president, Mr. Safa, is gone. But I can only assume that the president wants to reassign him, perhaps to lead one of his flagship projects, for example, agriculture, because the next flagship in the next administration, the president has really promised to focus on food security. So he may want him to lead that. He has brought in Dr. David Sengler, who did a fantastic job in the Ministry of Basic Education over the last 3 years. So I'm sure he's brought in Sengler to piece everything together. His predecessor, Mr. Jusuf Safa, we do not know what the president plans for him, but I can only assume that he's planning to perhaps put him in a very strategic position, such as the Ministry of Agriculture. I wouldn't know, but in terms of reaction, that is a major surprise. That's what has got everyone talking.
A former chief minister who was put into the foreign ministry has now been moved again. A new person is replacing him at the foreign ministry. Is that a big shock to a lot of Sierra Leoneans?
It is quite shocking in the sense that the person who has replaced him is a very young guy, even if he's a top performer himself. But I think what may have contributed to that decision is that the young person, Mr. Timothy Taba, it's bilingual. He lived and worked in Russia, so he speaks Russian very well. Also speaks French. Of course, he speaks very good English. So I'm sure as the chief negotiator, you know, the finance minister has to be the chief negotiator in most of the countries. And foreign policy goes, I think his language ability and the fact that he's a very hardworking, result-oriented man. I think the president has actually brought in young people. I think that's the point that needs to be stressed.
Some of his supporters are telling me that the president is keeping with his promise to encourage young people to take up top positions because he hopes this will be an example to young Sierra Leoneans that they can also do same. Is that a reflection of what is on the ground at the moment?
Absolutely. That seems to be the theme of the at least the first batch of appointments that he has made. The National Revenue Authority, the National Tax Body, has now a young person as well, Mr. Abraham Sori. He's a young man, and he has replaced Mr. Dr. Jibao, who was there. So basically, the point is that he's brought in really influential young people in strategic positions who should really send a clear message to everyone that he's keeping faith with young people and he wants to lead with young people because ultimately Sierra Leoneans care about delivery.
So basically, the expectation is that because he's had a fair idea to assess all these ministers in the first term, he's better placed in the second term to make an informed decision on who best can carry out or help him administer the affairs of the nation, correct?
Absolutely. And obviously, in the lead-up to the election, various polls had said that he was going to win. So he's better prepared, he's ready in the sense that in 2018, although he expected to win, but he wasn't as convinced as he was in 2023. And so these appointments, are made based by a man who was prepared for the position and who has had a chance to assess a lot of people. He knows way more people than he did in 2018. And so we are hoping that he is going to make these decisions, you know, without any of the considerations or most of the considerations in 2018. In 2018, you know, he needed to compensate some people. Some people had stood by him whilst he was in operation. So that played a big part. Going forward, I think what is going to inform these appointments is really about performance, about delivery, it's about competence. So this is going to be his own cabinet. This is going to be his own administration in the true sense of it, so that we will hold him accountable for the appointments that he makes, and there will be no excuses, no ifs or buts. These people have to be competent and they have to deliver. They've got to make sure that the limited resources of the country have to be managed well, so that we can all benefit from the dividends of democracy.
Ibrahim Tommy is the executive director of the Center for Accountability and the Rule of Law in Sierra Leone. He spoke with VOA's Peter Clotty. In Zimbabwe, lawyers representing the main opposition party, Citizens Coalition for Change, or the CCC, said they plan to challenge the ruling of a magistrate court on Sunday that upheld a government ban on the party's political rally. The decision comes as the police have given instructions to officers nationwide not to ban opposition political rallies in the build-up to the August 23rd general elections. The police, however, advise political parties to follow proper procedures when arranging for venues for rallies. Agency Gumbo is one of the lawyers representing Citizens Coalition for Change. He tells me that the police directive vindicates the opposition's position that there is an erosion of democracy in Zimbabwe.
We have written a request to the Magistrates Court for us to be furnished with the written judgment so that we can, you know, inform our next course of action. But obviously, we have taken the decision that we will be challenging the ruling by the magistrate. But what we need to decide on is the procedure we are going to adopt. Either we are going to go by way of seek a declarator from court, from the High Court, or, you know, perhaps we are going to take the route of an appeal. As soon as we get the written judgment, we will then, you know, take up our next action. But the bottom line is we are challenging that rule by the magistrate, and we are challenging it for purposes of ensuring that in future, that decision does not inform the stance that will be taken by law enforcement or regulating authorities.
I read an article, the Zimbabwe police inspector is asking police around the country to be respectful of the opposition. This incident by the court case, is this isolated or this normally happened?
Well, it's not isolated. We do not believe that it's isolated. Why do I? Because the level of pressure which the case placed on those that are in leadership of government, which has led them to take stance. Because obviously our story, it vindicates what the police have said, or what the commanders of the police force have said to their subordinates, vindicates the position that we have taken as a party to say, you know, there's a shrinking of the democratic, there's an erosion of the democratic space in the country, the electoral playfield is not even, and, you know, state institutions seem to be conniving to support the status quo. Obviously, the fact that we raised all these issues with the courts, the fact that even during the proceedings, we made public statements against the actions of the police, you know, that must have put a lot of pressure. And again, the people of Zimbabwe, all over the world, international community, our, you know, regional counterparts, they spoke heavily against the actions of the police. They spoke heavily against the actions of, you know, state institutions in barring CCC rallies, in barring CCC activities. All this compounded the pressure on the regime. Hence, we have seen the stance that the police have now taken.
You said you have requested for the ruling. What do you want to do with it?
Well, when a court makes a decision, we have avenues of law which we can pursue as if we do not agree with the decision. If I maybe, your question is, you know, even in the face of the ruling and what the police have now said, we want to correct the wrong legal position which was taken by the magistrate and make sure that the record is set as to what the magistrate can or cannot do, what the regulatory authority can or cannot do in terms of maintenance of peace and order acts.
Agency Gumbo is one of the lawyers representing Zimbabwe's main opposition Citizen Coalition for Change. He was speaking with us from Zimbabwe's capital, Harare. And that's it for this Tuesday, July 11th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending your morning with us. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I am James Botti in Washington, wishing that you will have an amazing Tuesday.